Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Kevin.
Two creatives who recently placed creativity at the center of our lives. And this is the Time is Right podcast. Today's episode is about deciding to live a creative life. Why do it? And what we think that means.
All right, so let's start by defining what a creative life or centering a life around creativity means to us. What does it mean to you?
Wish that was an easy question. Well, I'm a musician and a composer, and it's not how I make my living, though, right? So I'm not like doing film composition or, you know, writing jingles or anything. You know, this is most people think of this as my hobby, but to me it's more than that. It really affects the way I look at life, look at the world. You know, almost everything I do or think about or get involved in either has a musical component or a self-generated soundtrack behind it. That's
I think most people have a soundtrack to their lives in their head. You're just writing yours out and putting it on record.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, and I mean, that's how I look at things. But the whole idea of being creative doesn't necessarily mean it's about art. You know, it is for me. And, you know, how do you define art?
Well, and there's often a lot of, sorry to interrupt, but I want to pick up on what you're saying there about the confusion sometimes between art and crafts. And you know, even when we talk about art, like writing is an art, we talk about practicing our craft, and the two are kind of interchangeably used, but they're really sort of different, but they're intertwined and they depend on each other, I think. So hopefully I didn't derail you, but
not in the slightest. In fact, I'm actually glad you brought that up, because for me, you know, I've been making music in one shape or form since I was 10 years old, which is longer ago than I'd like to admit, ever since I was playing tuba in the middle school band. And there was always music in the house. My dad was a composer and a musician, and some of my brothers are players. You know, it's just always been a thing. But it's only relatively recently, I'd say in the last, spent some time in a band. You might know something about that.
I remember something vaguely, yeah.
Literally in the last couple of years that I decided, you know, I really want to do this. I really want to get into this as not just a guy who plays music, but as a composer and really putting intention behind it and honing it as a craft and thinking that I have some ability and some talent and some experience, but you know, I've not really honed in on the craft of composing, and that has been incredibly fun and fulfilling for me to kind of move beyond, well, I don't want to say move beyond playing in a band type thing, because that's incredibly enjoyable and incredibly creative as well, just in a different way, but getting into the nuances of, you know, how music is constructed and put together and things like that.
You mentioned something there about intentionality, and I think that's really important, and it's definitely something that I think we're going to talk about in future episodes, but I think it's important here, because at some point when you're practicing your creativity, you do often make that leap to say, well, it's not just fun, it's now important. And I don't want it to just be more of this. I want it to be better. And we start challenging ourselves to make something better. And it still may be only for ourselves, but we're challenging ourselves to go deeper, longer, try new things, maybe pushing against that comfort zone. And we'll get into some methods to try to unlock that if you haven't reached that yet. But I think a lot of us, we kind of find that naturally. For me, writing for so many years, but not really thinking too much about, you know, I just had a vague idea that a book would be published someday with my words in it. You know, it wasn't really a big You know, it was something I did. I did it on weekends. I did it on every free moment I had. But at the same time, I wasn't all that intentional about it until, like you, although now I'm looking back, it's about 6 years ago. Well, it was, I kind of went through two waves. The first was about a decade ago when I had more time. I had a few days a week where I didn't have children around and I was completely on my own for like 3 days a week. And so I had a lot more time and I really kind of started to focus on the writing. And that's when I started to think, oh, there's more to it than just that. And I needed to intentionally figure out how to go about making things better. And then after a health crisis, I realized how short life is. And I realized that if I really had stories to tell, I needed to get a lot better at telling them. And I needed to be more intentional about actually how to, what stories I wanted to tell. And again, how. And so, like you said, getting into the craft and discovering the craft. And that came with its own rewards.
Yeah. And oh, definitely. I mean, for a long time, I was like, just, I'd like write a joke song. And then 2 years later, I'd write another joke song, you know, something like that. And then, you know, and that was funny for 5 minutes. And then after a while, I was like, I think I can do more than this, you know, and I really could do something more interesting and more, and not that there's anything wrong with joke songs, there's not. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, well, I've got all these tools here, you know.
right.
And you know, we're going to talk about technology in detail in other episodes, too, and how enabling that is. But now that I can have an orchestra, literally an orchestra on my laptop, and a room full of synthesizers on my laptop and guitar amps and everything else, it's like, why not explore all that stuff? Why not build into that and really dig into how all of these sounds and textures and ideas come together?
It used to be, especially when we were younger, technology was a barrier to doing a lot of things that we might have wanted to do. Think of, for example, the movies we used to make. We went to a lot of trouble to script and shoot those films. And they were silly and stupid most of the time. Mm-hmm. But we put a lot of effort into them. And if we had today's video technology to do those with, it would have been possibly a whole different career line for a couple of us, right? I mean,
sure.
I think, though, technology has... it's got a lot of drawbacks too, but I mean, it's definitely helped creators to produce the thing that they want to create. And one of the things I wanted to kind of loop back to was that intentionality and not necessarily thinking about making a living from it. You sure. can, or you can try, as I am, but I think it really means not just putting creativity at the center of your life so you can generate some stream of income with it. Maybe that's your goal, but it doesn't have to be. I think the main point is that we want to put a focus on creativity so that it means what we're producing means something to us and it makes us feel better. It could be as simple as that.
Yeah. And you bring up a good point because there's a tendency, and I think this is, you know, it's a cultural tendency, and I think it's especially true in the United States, where a lot of people equate success with monetary reward or, you know, something along those lines. And find themselves, well, I don't want to take time to do that particular thing because I'm not going to get good at it enough, or, you know, I won't be successful at it, whatever that means. And that's obviously not true for everyone. Some people take up these things because they're driven to do so and they have absolutely no interest whatsoever in monetary gain. I would count myself as one of those people. But and it is a cultural thing, though. So a lot of people get turned off by the idea of engaging in the creative pursuit that, you know, they might not feel like, well, you know, it's going to take a long time to get good at that. And that's, I think it's an unhealthy way to look at it.
Yeah, that can be a thing that happens too. I mean, generally, communities around creativity are supportive, but mm-hmm. sometimes there can be an element within a community that's putting some pressure on you to produce, to write for publication, to write music to sell, to put your whatever you're making, your knitting or something up on Etsy and make some money. And it
right.
The gig economy is enabling all of those things, and many people are making a sideline income with it
sure.
or whatever.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. it's not required in order for you to be successful at being creative, because
right. Right.
that is something that you define yourself. And mm-hmm. and that was definitely something that I want to get into in one of the upcoming episodes, is permission, giving yourself permission to mm-hmm. do this. And once you've done that, then I think you can do whatever makes you happy. And yeah. you should do it for whatever reasons make you happy.
Yep.
And, you know, I think of Adam Savage from Discovery Channel's Mythbusters.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
He's got a group now called Tested, a channel on YouTube called Tested. But, you know, there's a whole maker community around that. But some of them make things for money, and mm-hmm. some of them don't. And in fact, there's one that I'm thinking of, Simone Yurtz. I don't know if you've ever seen her.
No, no.
She makes the wackiest things, and she has her own YouTube channel. And but she's, the wacky things that she's making are only to make herself happy, and yet mm-hmm. people buy in on it. So she's actually doing both. She's able to sell things to people that she has no intention of ever being for anyone other than herself. And I mean, she made a selfie station for her dog. She took a Tesla car and turned it into a truck and called it Truckla. And it's a better looking truck than Tesla's truck. But the point was, she just did these things because she wanted to, and it felt good to her to do them. Mm-hmm. And that is just a massive expression of creativity.
Yeah, definitely.
So maybe a little deeper into why we do these things. Why did we decide that creativity needed a focus in our lives?
Well, why not? No, I'm just kidding. Seriously, I may have been, as I mentioned before, I think about music, and I always have. I think about music all the time. It's always in my head, and it's not always just earworms, you know, other people's songs, things like that. It's ideas and chord progressions and sounds and textures and all of these things that they just come to me. And it had been like this all my life. And it's like, well, it sounds great in my head, but I never really, for all these years, never really had the skills to get those sounds out of my head and, you know, into the air where people could hear them, or even I could hear them. And so, you know, it feeds a lot into it. It's why even occasionally I would dip in and say, you know, I'm going to make something. It's hard to get the focus sometimes because honestly, for many years I had just too many hobbies and kids. You know, I had my son's 30 now, so he, you know, he's doing his own thing. But so now I just feel like I have more time to devote to it. Actually time, not so much, because I do work full time. So it's not so much that I have time. I have the headspace open for it. I have, you know, more room in my creative side of my brain, if you will, to focus on one thing. And like I said, I had a lot of hobbies, and it's like, you know, all of these, I'm done with them. I'm done. You know, I spent years painting little miniature war game figures. I spent years role-playing games, and I still enjoy those things, but they're not a focus anymore, and they're things that I don't get really obsessed over anymore. But I'll talk your ear off about natural minor versus harmonic minor any day now, because that's kind of my jam. So now, you know, now I've got the tools, I'm developing the skills, and each piece that I write is that much more nuanced or interesting to me anyway. And the other thing that I'm noticing after about a year and a half of really focusing on this is that each piece is more intentionally composed. So I'm mm-hmm. not just improvising anymore, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with improvising. But now it's like I'm actually thinking about how I compose my music. It's similar to when photographers move from, oh, that's cool, I'm going to take a picture of that, to eventually going, you know what, I like this because the light is coming from this direction and I want it to, and I'm going to move over here because, you know, I got this shadow over here that's going to look really cool. And you think more about how that is going to look to you. And it's similar with music. You say, you know, I want these elements here. I want, you know, I want violins or I want violas or I want this wub synth sound right here. you know, just really thinking about it and doing it intentionally. And then doing all these things, getting these things out of my head, it's fulfilling and it centers me because I'm actually doing something with all these ideas that I have.
Yeah. And I think when you touched on like three things there that I want to expand on. So one is that the headspace idea, mm-hmm. right? And I think there's something almost addictive about when you really... Yeah. dig into a hobby mm-hmm. and it starts to turn into a craft mm-hmm. and you want to get better. You want to do things you never thought you could do.
Yeah.
I'm finding even in my writing that even my first novel was not what I expected to do at all. It was originally six short stories and in a world or a setting that I didn't think was really my bailiwick, but it.
I love that word.
It turns out that it really is. it really is something that is me. It's essentially mm-hmm. me, and I didn't realize that for a long time. But once I started writing it, and I had some help from a professional editor, Kat Howard. She was great in instructing me to say, hey. There's more here. Develop some of these ideas, and I think you've got a novel. And when I looked at it, I'm like, oh, but it's six short stories. How do I turn that into a novel? It doesn't have a real beginning, middle, and an end. And that's what pushed me to study craft mm-hmm. a little more mm-hmm. and realize that there's more than one way to tell a story. There, you know, it doesn't have to be following that arc. I mean, yes, there is a beginning, a middle, and an end to the book, but it's not actually plotted that way. It's plotted in a serial structure where one seed seeds the next scene mm-hmm. and so on, and you build the story that way. And I spent months actually researching that. And like you said, you start to get almost addicted to that craft and figuring out how to make what you're doing better.
Yeah.
And then you also touched on, in your headspace comment, that you had the time to do it, but more than that, you had the space to focus on it. And I think that's something that I struggled with for a long time, with a career in high tech and just the demands of that, pushing everything out of your head, even during your off time. To the point where you just felt like you couldn't focus on something creative, and you couldn't really dig in enough to get good at something, or good enough for myself, mm-hmm. where I felt good about what I was doing. And it took stepping away from that to say, okay, take a breather. What is it you want to do? And like you said, be intentional and figure out what it is you're trying to do, and then figure out what tools you need and what methods and how you go about actually doing it. And, you know, one of the reasons I do this is, to be quite honest, stress nearly killed me. And being creative makes me not stressed. And even last year, when I got back as a contractor into technology for a while, the same thing started to happen all over again. I was, you know, not writing, not thinking about it. I was spending too many hours of the day trying to solve logical, technical problems and not enough thinking about what actually makes me happy. Mm-hmm. And I was glad when that was over, because now I'm back to focusing on what makes me happy and what makes me not stressed.
It's interesting. There's a bit of a contrast in the, you know, our two approaches. I mean, you're taking the opportunity to really kind of do this full time and really devote yourself to your craft and to your art. And, you know, and I'm devoting a great deal of my time and headspace into my craft and my art, but I'm doing it without, you know, I'm maintaining the full-time job, and it's also in tech, just to, you know, it's also demanding, but at the same time, it's like, and the reason I mention this is, it's like, you don't have to quit your job to get into a creative space. The only reason to do that is the degree to which you want to dive in.
Yeah, and for me, it was also timing, right? Mm-hmm. It was kind of the right time in my life. I mean, I look at it and I could work another 5 years and then retire, or I could essentially retire from technology now and do what I wanted to do and worry about finances later, which is essentially what I've done. And hopefully that the creative endeavor will eventually finance the borrowing that I'm doing against my retirement. But part of that decision came about simply because I didn't know if I was going to be there to enjoy that retirement or not anyway. So I might as well do it now. So again, there's as many different ways, reasons for somebody to look at creativity and saying, what can it do for my life, as there are people. We're introducing our resources segment, where we share creative lessons, books, articles, podcasts, YouTube videos, whatever creativity-related thing we found useful.
Mine this week is a podcast, actually. There's a podcast called Creative Codex, and it's produced by a gentleman named MJ Dorian. Dorian is a musician, visual artist, living in New York City. And his podcast is this eclectic mix of really well-researched history, biography. He does artist interviews, and it's all with a focus on creativity. And I've been kind of going through the back catalog. It's really fascinating. But he did a whole segment on Frida Kahlo. I'm terrible at
yes,
that.
The artist, yes.
Yeah, the artist Frida Kahlo, and how she was almost killed in a bus accident. I didn't know that. And how that experience and how that changed her life affected a great deal about why she painted and how she painted. Hmm. He did stuff on Leonardo, a whole series on Carl Jung. And he just wrapped up a series on Emily Dickinson. It's really fascinating stuff and pretty engaging. So highly recommended. Creative Codex podcast.
Okay. I have not heard of that one. I'll have to put that on my podcatcher. So I recently read Seth Godin's latest book, The Practice, Shipping Creative Work. And I thought it was going to be a deep dive into actually producing creative work. And it sort of is, but not in the way that I thought. Really, it's a pep talk or a series of pep talks on how to push forward and don't listen to naysayers and so forth. So, I mean, it wasn't what I was expecting, but it was still very useful and helpful. And I think if you're a creator struggling with self-doubt or finding it hard to get into a regular creative practice, that book will help you move forward, I think. And it's almost like in a series of affirmations, but not not in a hokey way. It's mm-hmm. it's definitely, they're numbered points, and he's really making points as you go through. And some of them are tips, and some of them are insights, and some are just, hey, why don't you try this? It worked for this person. Maybe it'll work for you. Not necessarily something to read all the way through, but something to maybe pick up when you're struggling with some aspect of your creative life. That's Seth Godin's The Practice, Shipping Creative Work.
Cool. I'll have to check that out. I had not heard of that one. That does sound really, really good. And, you know, you touched on... you know, what we often refer to as imposter syndrome, and it will probably have to do like a 3-episode series on that.
Yeah, we'll have to like set aside a month. It'll be imposter month on the Time is Right podcast. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's our show. I'm John Davis. I am a composer and musician, and I really enjoy combining music and visuals, which, you know, means a lot of my stuff is available on YouTube. And because my name is so absurdly common, it's almost impossible to find on YouTube. So I'm going to say go to Instagram instead, and you'll find me at JDSampo. That's JDSAMPO. And you'll find all my Instagram posts related to music, stuff I'm doing, and a whole lot of pictures of golden retrievers. And from there, you can definitely link into my YouTube. And at some point, I'm going to get off my lazy butt and do like a SoundCloud and a Bandcamp and all those other good things. But for now, that's the way to find me.
And the golden retrievers are worth, you know, 5 minutes of your day to...
They are.
De-stress,
at least,
right?
At least.
And I'm Kevin Fellows. I'm currently working on the first novel in a historical fantasy series. You can find my debut novel at modernfolklorepress.com or in any bookstore anywhere, pretty much on the planet, if you order it. And you can find me at kevinjfellows.com on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. I'm all at Kevin J. Fellows.
Okay, like I said, that's our show. So join us next time where we'll be discussing making decisions and choices to support living a creative life. So if you like the podcast, remember to subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. That'll help us bubble up in the search results and so forth. Really help us out a lot. If you enjoyed this podcast, share it with your friends. That's all I got, man.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.